I like eating. I like all of the great things that come with traveling and or just eating in interesting places. Of taking the time to, you know, drive an extra mile or you know, take a chance on something you haven't had before. I mean, it's fun. It feels good. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it.
That's Anthony Bourdain. And this is part three of Raincoast Books' exclusive podcast with the author of The Nasty Bits, the most recent book by best-selling author, Chef Bourdain. I'm Robert Wemet, and this series of podcasts were recorded when Anthony was in Vancouver, BC, to promote his new book. I tagged along as he went to various media interviews, so our conversations were squeezed in between car trips across town and whisking into studios or at book signings. This podcast is a bit like The Nasty Bits itself. It's a collection of stories and opinions on a variety of subjects. So let's start with Anthony's thoughts on what, if anything, chefs around the world have in common.
Well, I mean, I think that working chefs who are famous for their food, right, and not for necessarily for a TV show, you know, guys like Eric Rappaire or, you know, most of the French, Daniel Boulou, yeah, they are very similar, meaning, you know, we're all very comfortable hanging out together and talking about food. You know, however you may present yourself to the dining room or in public, as far as attitude and you know, self-importance, there's no lying among chefs. Everybody pretty much knows their, you know, how good they are or limited they are, and they certainly, it's more of a blue collar, you know, just like firemen hanging out after work or construction workers. Except, you know, we're eating and drinking really, really well and talking about food. Chefs all over the world, you know, whether I've met them or not, we all kind of end up having the same conversation. And we certainly share a lot of character traits. Shy people, generally. I mean, are they protecting a soft core? You know, socially dysfunctional, you know, that's what's very comforting about the hierarchy of the kitchen is, you know, you've built yourself a fairly rigid, safe world, you know, filled with pointy objects. But I mean, you're given enough time there, you know how to work those levers. You know, we're less sure of ourselves, or most chefs certainly are less sure of themselves, you know, among real people, you know, trying to, like, you know, have normal human relationships or, you know, conduct business in the you know, the regular non-restaurant business community. That's hard, you know, and I think a lot of people are instinctively shy of that kind of contact or that kind of, this kind of relations.
You're on the road almost constantly now. Do you miss being in the kitchen?
I miss sitting at the bar after a busy shift, feeling like on top of the world, you know, and hanging out with my cooks, knowing I put in a really busy night. But the work, standing on my feet 14 hours a day, no, I don't miss it. I had 30 years of it. I mean, I should probably lie. Oh, yes, I really miss it. I, you know, it's my heart, it's my soul. 30 years I had. It's a lot of knee bends.
Is there stuff you don't do? Like you like to try stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But is there stuff you just, like, are you afraid of heights or you don't ride a bike?
I'm afraid of karaoke. dancing in public, you know, I'm past that, way past the age where any sensible person should have to see that. I'm afraid of clowns and nurses' shoes and rats. So won't be eating rat. I don't care how delicious some might believe them to be. I'm afraid of, like, you know, mediocrity. Like, that terrifies me. Like, to, you know, I don't want to be mediocre, and I'm terrified when there's a lot of mediocrity. When I seem to be surrounded by, you know, people who are being deliberately mediocre. You know, Paris Hilton scares the hell out of me, because, you know, she makes a living by pretending to be even more stupid, vapid, and useless and untalented than she is, and is rewarded for it. That seems to be a career for a lot of people on these reality shows. I find that frightening.
There's a recurring theme in The Nasty Bits about the work ethic, and that really the restaurant business isn't for everybody.
I think if you're used to being on time every day, never calling in sick, you know, any kind of hard work prepares you for other businesses. Certainly, writing books and talking about myself on television is a lot easier. I never complain about that because, you know, I know what work is. I would say that the same is true of rice farming. You know, if you come from a rice, if you grew up in a rice farming family in Vietnam and you get the opportunity to go to MIT, you're not complaining about your workload. You know what work is. You know what hunger is. And you know the caprices and perils of, bad luck. It's something that makes Latino immigrants a more attractive option for a lot of chefs in New York because they come from a place where it's hard. They know what hard work is. They have, it's a character issue. They know what it's like to be part of a family and be responsible for other people from a culture where food is important, where even if you do everything right, things can go terribly wrong. You know, if you listen to Mexican folk music, it's all about tragedy, rejection, misfortune, and yet they find beauty or humor in those things. A lot of times a spoiled American kid, he'll see the boss cutting back on kitchen staff, pinching pennies on the same day he buys a Porsche, then an expensive new girlfriend, and that's a soul-destroying moment for him. He just can't handle that kind of unfairness, whereas most of the people in the world understand that unfair is, we live in a very unfair, harsh world, where, one day of bad weather can wipe out a year's work. Where you call the police to come, you call the police and they rob you again. That makes for good restaurant help.
You also talk a lot about how the kitchen's really a great leveler.
There's no lying in the restaurant business, okay? You walk in, you talk a good game, you flash a great resume. Everybody knows within 5 minutes. Everyone knows everything about you. Within a few days, you spend so much time together. It's a very intimate workplace. It's the last meritocracy where men and women can speak to each other honestly. The level of discourse is completely politically incorrect, and even some moronic. But your worth, your value as a coworker, as a human being, is dependent entirely on your performance on the job. What other place exists that is like that, where you can be however nice or disgusting as you choose? But you were judged by where you are when the chips are down. You say my knife works great. Well, we'll find out in seconds. A lot of chefs, when you first come into their kitchen, it's like, oh yeah, make me an omelet. I know everything about you. By the time you finish that omelet, I know everything there is to know. I not only know if you can really cook as you say you can, I know if you're a liar.
Did you say you've learned more about human nature from the restaurant business or from being on the road?
Yeah, I think travel. You get however useful and wonderful working in the restaurant business is, it's a pretty narrow view of the world. You don't see much of the real world. It's a subculture. However international that subculture, it's still, when you get out in the real wide world and you see people with real problems from a variety of different countries and cultures, I take a more charitable view of the basic goodness of humanity having traveled than I tended before to look at the public as hungry and capricious and maybe not so good when things get tough. That's changed when you see, when you go to Vietnam, it's hard to come back cynical.
You've stuck with food all this time.
I like eating. I like all of the great things that come with traveling and or just eating in interesting places. I've taken the time to drive an extra mile or take a chance on something you haven't had before. It's fun. It feels good. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. I feel bad for food critics, for instance, who burn out. They've been writing fun with mayonnaise articles for so long, or the latest little crummy bistro in their community, and it bleeds all the joy out of the experience. They go loping off to the latest restaurant already angry and hating it because it's probably going to be just like the other restaurant they were at. If that's the way you feel, you should stop doing it. Do something useful.
There are people who just eat out at fast food restaurants or the sort of chain restaurants. What advice have you got
for them? Stop, for God's sake. If at all possible, you know, find an ethnic neighborhood in your community and eat there. Cook for yourself. Just, you know, there's more to this world. You're it's bad enough getting fat, but getting fat on bad food, what a waste. You know, food's fun. Food's important. Food feels good, or it should. You know, the only thing, the best you can say about those restaurants is you won't be hungry when you're done eating there. You may as well eat styrofoam. In fact, you might well be. Find a foodie, befriend them, and let them take you by the hand and feed you well. You know, finding good food isn't that hard. You know, it's a lot like finding drugs. You know, find others with similar appetites and follow them to their source.
You completely slammed the idea of British pubs going gourmet in a chapter in the book called The Drinking Problem.
Oh yeah, no, I've reevaluated my position. No, that I like to think it's a funny piece, and I was initially outraged to see the introduction of good food in a high-end food in a pub. But I've since been back and eaten some very decent food. They seem to have settled down, and more often than not are serving pretty authentic, good stuff with a reasonable scope of ambition. You know, there's nothing wrong with some decent food along with your pint of Guinness. I did a commentary in the back of Nasty Bits because, you know, on rereading, I was wrong about some things or was silly.
So you made a reference to getting your first tattoo. Have you got any more?
Yeah. I have a knife on my back with a little drop of blood on it. A little band here that was my first. I got one in Borneo in Malaysia of a snake eating its own tail and Ebon one. And I was just on Miami Ink as part of a cross-promotional thing for the network where they... So I was on the show, and they got a skull. I was very affected by this tribe the Iban in Borneo, who are into, you know, as you accumulate experiences, you commemorate that somehow. You as you leave marks on this world, you mark yourself. Probably undignified for a guy my age, but I don't really care. You know, why not? I just don't see my body as that important to really kind of... You know, it's graffiti, essentially. You know, Tony was here, or somebody was, you know. Somebody hurt me, somebody showed me something beautiful. Don't want to forget this, whatever.
Anthony, you tell the story of eating vichyssoise on a cruise ship as a kid and getting turned on to food. That experience turned you on to food. I'm wondering how you got interested in writing.
Given two points in my life, I was given a freakish and very fortunate opportunity to write, and I showed up on time and I did it. I've never, all those years cooking, I wasn't sitting around writing unpublished manuscripts. In fact, you know, I ain't bragging or anything, but I've never written anything that hasn't been published. And generally, I get and I'm not writing on spec either. I don't have time. I never had the time. It wasn't like I was sitting around writing. I kind of always liked the idea of being a writer. You know, writers got to wear, you know, silk smoking jackets, smoke opium, and score with, you know, kooky, you know, of sexually ambiguous women in black turtlenecks, and that sounded like hot.
So you're cooking all day and then writing all night?
No, I cooked all day, woke up early, and I'd write for a couple of hours before I went to work. I'm smartest in the fastest in the morning. I get progressively slower and stupider after that. And if I don't write in the morning, I'm not writing. I did that for about 9 months, you know, while I was writing Kitchen Confidential. And Bone in the Throat and Gone Bamboo, same thing. I think Cook's Tour, I took a month and a half off, 2 months in the Caribbean. You know, I'd be keeping notes while I was on the road and writing, you know, on planes and in hotels and things like that, or when I was back in New York between shows. And then I took a month and a half off and did a rewrite, you know, put it together. It takes me about 8 months almost every day to you know, for the whole, you know, all the for two drafts of a book. You know.
And are you working on anything now?
Yeah, a novel. Fourth crime novel. Yeah, it's a therapy for me. back in the day when I started cooking, you know, the boss, the major investors, the people who brought your meat, took out your trash, you know, delivered your fish, they were all from the entertainment and financial services sector, shall we say. After the novel, it's the Asia book, I hope. It's going to be about me living in Asia, and eating and whatever else happens. No more cookbooks. I've done. Yeah. You know, I'm really proud of the cookbook. But it's done. You know, I put it all down, and there ain't no more.
Anthony Bourdain. His newest book is called The Nasty Bits, Collected Varietal Cuts, Usable Trim, Scraps, and Bones, published by Bloomsbury and distributed in Canada by Raincoast Books. You can buy it online from chaptersindigo.ca or amazon.ca. Visit the Raincoast Books website for links. And while you're there, there are some pictures from Anthony's visit to Vancouver, all at www.raincoast.com/Bourdain. That's it for now. Please stay tuned for more podcasts from Raincoast Books. I'm Robert Wiemet. Thanks for listening.